Never let it be said I didn't finish what I started. This is the last chapter, chapter 7, of the online book by James Montgomery entitled The United States Still a British Colony. This chapter is called American Land Ownership, a True Oxymoron. It includes an introduction by the informer. What Mr. James Montgomery is trying to convey in this, his final writing on this subject, is that of laying the foundation for how this country operates today. Not that you can go into a court and present these arguments today. You can't. If you don't know the power structure's beginnings, then you are doomed forever to repeat the same mistakes as those that preceded you in their quest to seek justice. To truly win in the situation, there must be a concerted effort by at least 70% of the people to overturn the present state of affairs. That will not happen because of the ignorance of the masses that are so easily led by those in power. The people have truly forsaken the true sovereign, namely the Lord Almighty. Without going into the so-called religion aspect, let me just pose some questions. Did the Lord Almighty create the land? Yes. Did the Pope create the land? No. Did the King create the land? No. Did any other man create the land? No. Did any group of men called State with a capital S create the land? No. Now that I have answered the questions for you, then here are some that you are to answer yourselves. Then, who is the real owner of the land? Did not the creator of the land bestow it upon all men and their heirs to be stewards of the land, granting to no one man or group of men absolute dominion over any land? When men die, who does the land escheat to? For those not familiar with that term escheat, it means, who does the land go back to when all men die? Your answers can only show that no pope, king, man himself, or group of men called State with a capital S can ever claim they own the land and charge another man a fee to live on that land. Mr. Montgomery is showing you the progression from a certain period of time that certain mere mortal men have decided that they were granted certain rights above all other men in claiming dominion over all land. The pecking order, starting from the top in controlling land, are 1. The Pope, 2. The king of all lands, but we are talking specifically the king of England here, or queen. 3. Knights. 4. Lord proprietors of the king or queen in America. 5. Royal governors of the king or queen in America. 6. Administrative officers of the corporate colonies of America. 7. Freeholders / freemen of granted property in America. 8. The officers of the newly constituted States of America gave way to the 9 officers of the United States, which now reverses 8 and 9 due to the states joining Union. 10. The county officers, which are the corporate instrumentalities of the state. And last, 11, simple man, meaning you, reading this. You, number 11, are so far removed from the land that the Lord Almighty gave to all simple men, that essentially you have no claim but as a squatter on someone else's land, and have no control whatsoever in saying you have the right to not pay taxes for the use of the Pope's land. But the Pope is the figurehead of a corporation called the Vatican, consisting of men forming a quote-unquote religion, which the Lord Almighty never created a quote-unquote religion, claiming complete dominion over all land in the world. When the Pope dies, another of these men is chosen as the new Pope. There is one little quirk that needs to be mentioned. That is, a group of men exist that have control of even the Vatican. Therefore, every chain holder on down to number 11 on the list is controlled. That group of men are called bankers. The Pope and the King in 1213, on to a period just past 1218, lost a lot of money fighting each other, and drew on a group of men, one in particular, that loaned to each side money. When neither could pay the loans back and defaulted, the money lender foreclosed. He foreclosed in agreement by not taking all the property, except for England, as is done today on foreclosures. But an arrangement was made that satisfied the so-called Holy Trinity that is espoused by Mr. Montgomery below. That quote-unquote Holy Trinity is mentioned in the Treaty of 1783. Of whom do you think the Holy Trinity consists? So, that list above, from 1 to 11, actually needs another entity. I did not put him in, so I could make it clear who it is in order of claim to the land you live on as a tenant. Now, number 1 has been replaced by the banker, and everyone has shifted down a notch. Hello, number 12, you, the listener. How do you like your position on the list? Well, if you people reject allegiance to the true Lord and cling to another and pledge allegiance to another, then you deserve to pay those that allow you through privilege to live on their land. You gave up that right to live on land of the true land owner without even a fee, except to abide by his laws, and not that of mere mortal man such as yourself. Until you understand this, and what Mr. Montgomery has tried telling you in his previous articles, and I have in my books and articles on the net, you will continue to be nothing but a slave to the system that perpetuated a fraud upon you and your family tree for centuries. No, you cannot attack unless the numbers are sufficient. Yes, the below is true, despite what anyone says to degrade Mr. Montgomery's research of many years. These people that degrade have either an ignorance level so high that no amount of education will correct it, or they are in league with a higher number on the pecking order that wants to keep the status quo. These men are the only ones that the Lord Almighty wished woe upon in the Bible for hiding the key of knowledge. See Luke and Matthew. You can look at it this way as relates to present day. The banker remains in complete control. I don't mean your local banker, but those that control all banks in America and the world. They operate with straw men, many deep, so as to keep the people ignorant as to what is going on. Look at the list above to see how many straw men exist. Mr. Montgomery mentions the Pope once below. He is trying to keep it a little simpler because the straw man of the Vatican / Pope, the crown, is easier to understand for most people. This is the same operation that many people get into by creating so many corporations that you never know just who is the controlling man. You may see this on government stories where the detective says he traced back through a tree of corporations and got lost in the many branches and could not find who really owns the contraband. I will vouch that Mr. Montgomery is a very thorough researcher and has nothing to gain from the dissemination of the information below, with the exception to get people to wake up to the truth instead of constantly, for decades, chasing the elusive Wizard of Oz with all his smoke and mirrors. I have read Mr. Montgomery's article below, and it confirms what I have also found. As I said, the power brokers control every lawyer and judge, who are also lawyers, in this, if not all other judges in the world, because without them the fraud could not be carried out. Have you ever heard of an honest trial where justice is dispensed to the American man or woman who runs afoul of the system, even when he is innocent? Where do you think all the money the private IRS collects goes to? Maybe to the credit of the straw man number 9 above? Credit to whom? Just follow the ladder back up to the top, and remember, the original numbers have all dropped one notch down to make room for whom? Signed, The Informer. A word from the author, James Montgomery. This book represents 10 years of my life. Whether you agree with my findings or not, know that my purpose for doing this research and writing this book is out of love for my country and the desire to serve my Lord Jesus Christ, with the hope of seeing the greatest nation on the face of the earth once again serve the God of Abraham. I've learned over the years that my Lord's grace is sufficient and his love passes any comprehension or understanding I thought I had. We are not forsaken. So those of you that may become discouraged, don't. Read the last chapter of our Lord's letter. We win. In the days ahead, there will be no doubt temptation to yield to discouragement and despair. I think he's talking to me there. Just keep your purpose true and your eyes on Jesus. As with Peter, reach out, take our Lord's hand, walk above the storm around you. My thanks to the Informer and his years of dedication and historical research, helping Americans see through the fog of deception, and his unmatched technical work and research in the field of law and taxes, and for making his books available to the public. The books we have published on this subject are in no way the totality of the historical and legal documents concerning the reality of our freedom, or rather the lack thereof. I challenge anyone with eyes to see and ears to hear, with a desire to know the truth, continue the search with us. It's your freedom, with knowledge as its key. Never allow yourself to become complacent with the status quo. Always try to increase your knowledge, because knowledge is freedom. Signed, James Franklin Montgomery. So this now, the last chapter of The United States is Still a British Colony, This chapter is entitled American Land Ownership, a True Oxymoron. Many of you are aware that the laws of this nation and its states were made in compliance and submission to the laws of England, only modified by state and federal law. You will see in this last chapter state statutes from just a few of the original colonies that this is the case. Are these what are called ancient statutes? Yes. However, since the King's Corporation is alive and well, as are his heirs, so is his trust, and the law used to create and govern it. The law that governs his trust can only be amended. No law could be enacted contrary to the King's will, and sestui que trust the main corporate soul, where office is always found, the crown. The king's practice of granting lands in this country to those whose loyalty to him continues, along with their land grants being protected by state ancient statutes which are still on the books. We are governed by the king's nobles, just as in times of old England. That was why the original 13th Amendment had to be memory-holed in the War of 1812, because we are governed by the king's nobles, and today we know them as esquires, or, which is a title of nobility, another title for them are lawyers. And how many are in Congress that are lawyers? Are there any in Congress that aren't lawyers? You get the picture. Self-proclaimed nobles and corporate trusts. If you missed the couple of shows ago, the original 13th Amendment, it's got nothing to do with today's 13th Amendment. Back in 1810, 1811, a congressman put it through, or a senator, put through a bill that passed, was ratified and everything. It became the original 13th Amendment, and it put teeth in the actual part of the Constitution that said you can't have a title of nobility and work for the government. That would have done away with all lawyers in government. They would have lost their rights as citizens, everything. They would have been out the door. And hence that's why we had the War of 1812. The British come in, burn the White House, burn all records of the original 13th Amendment, and then go home. And they let us celebrate this one battle we had won in New Orleans with Andy Jackson, and that was subsequent to the signing of the peace treaty, as most of us know, after the War of 1812 concluded. But why did the British just totally capture our capital, burn it down, and then go home? You would think they would have kept that advantage, don't you think? It wasn't about winning any war. It was about erasing any knowledge of the 13th Amendment, the original one. Welcome to the Twilight Zone, folks. All this real history that you're not taught and you're not supposed to know. Back to the book. The huge corporations have been granted power and liberty not known by the common man. The nobles, real and the created, occupy their possessions as fiduciaries and trustees of the king's grants. Only if they remain loyal to the system, their privilege and lifestyle are their reward. You will see that the Church of England was granted lands in this country, and their lands are protected by corporate privilege through trusts and fee simple title. As I have stated before, the king receives the gain for his business venture here in the United States, as he does with all of his corporations. A portion of the fines and taxes we pay today go right back to the sovereign, the king or queen of England, and his or her heirs and or successors. As I pointed out in previous chapters of the United States is still a British colony. After reading the facts contained in this chapter, you will find my conclusion, which is based on my 10 years of researching this subject through acquiring and culmination of historical facts which I have shared with you in this book. The Nexus. The following is from the Carolina Charter, 1663, quote, "All that territory or tract of ground situate, lying, and being within our dominions in America, listed known boundaries, and moreover all veins, mines, and quarries, as well discovered as not discovered, of gold, silver, gems, and precious stones, and all other whatsoever be it, of stones, metals, or any other thing whatsoever found or to be found within the country, isles, limits aforesaid," unquote. The following is also from the Carolina Charter, 1663, quote, "Saving always the faith, allegiance, and sovereign dominion due to us, our heirs and successors for the same, and saving also the right, title, and interest of all and every of our subjects of the English nation, which are now planted within the limits, bounds aforesaid, if any be," unquote. The following is from the Carolina Charter, 1663, quote, "Yielding and paying yearly to us, our heirs and successors, for the same, the yearly rent of 20 marks of lawful money of England, at the Feast of All Saints, yearly, forever. The first payment thereof to begin and be made on the Feast of All Saints, which shall be in the year of our Lord 1665, and also the fourth part of all gold and silver ore, which, with the limits aforesaid, shall from time to time happen to be found," unquote. The below statute contains a wealth of information. It is just another example of who owns the land in this country. The first thing I want you to see is corporation is an uppercase C. Proper noun, referring to the main corporation, i.e., the United States Corporation, also made clear by the end of the first sentence. Notice also that even the corporation, capital C, the United States government, even that does not claim a lodial title, because that office found is with the king. The government has only been vested with fee simple title through the corporate charters of the crown, as amended by the 1783 Treaty of Peace and resulting 1787 Constitution. The king can only pass a lodial title to his heirs and no one else. This is why the highest title the government can pass is fee simple. Did you ever have any questions as to whether the United States was just a company, a corporation? This should answer any of those questions you may have, the following few paragraphs. Also, notice that the corporation, capital C, can divest any and all occupiers of the land of any title or deed they may hold, transfer the land to the corporation in which it holds the land in fee simple title, and the title previously held by individuals or state, capital S, has its title quieted or divested and office found, then reversion back to the corporation. Now, if you will recall, the information I found concerning an act George Washington enacted, George Washington was a bastard. Listen to this. Contained in emails attached as the addendum to the third chapter to this book, wherein, here we go, Washington extended the jurisdiction and control of the District of Columbia. He created district states that overlaid the states. This is why, by the way, Washington could right away, right off the bat, call out the federal troops on Shays' Rebellion, the Whiskey Rebellion, all that. This is why he actually made it legal, because he superseded the geographic states right away in 1791. He made the District of Columbia, and he spread it out. That it overspread it throughout the rest of the colonies, the rest of the states, and all of the state governments were subordinate to the District of Columbia. Washington did that right off the bat, 1791. Back to the book. Since it is such a relevant subject and part of this book, I include it after the below statute so you can better understand the statute below. 16 U.S.C. Section 831X, Title 16, Chapter 12A, Section 831X, Condemnation Proceedings, Institution by Corporation, capital C, Venue, Statute. Quote, the corporation, capital C, may cause proceedings to be instituted for the acquisition by condemnation of any lands, easements, or rights of way, which, in the opinion of the corporation, are necessary to carry out the provisions of this chapter. The proceedings shall be instituted in the United States District Court for the district in which the land, easement, right of way, or other interest, or any part thereof, is located, and such court shall have full jurisdiction to divest the complete title to the property sought to be acquired out of all persons or claimants, and vest the same in the United States in fee simple, and to enter a decree quieting the title thereto in the United States of America, capital U, capital S, capital A, unquote. Also see below, 40A-2, Section 3, Eminent Domain, North Carolina Statute. Before we move on to the action taken by George Washington, you need to understand that the legal term fee simple is now a metaphor, just as the legal term United States. It is given lip service today in relation to the common man, and has another meaning when used in relation to the crown, or the main sub-corporation, the United States, with its seat being the District of Columbia. When dealing with land ownership, you have to use the definition at law that governs the crown, not the metaphors created later by his barristers to con the common man into believing that he or she has allodial or fee simple title to the land. All that is necessary to know the condition on which you own your land, or supposedly own your land, I guess. If you think you have allodial, fee simple title, or fee tail title, ask yourself one question. Is there a tax imposed on the land that you claim to own? If a tax is or can be levied, you do not own the land. Because if you fail to pay the tax, the land is reclaimed by the corporation, by alienation and reversion. Also, under the institutional law of the crown, that came with the conquest of Britain by William the Conqueror, you could not be charged a tax on the land if you had fee simple title. It could not be diminished in any way. The fee was payment by the king for the sworn loyalty of the lords and knights to fight for the king in his wars of conquest. Later changed to a monetary fee, to pay soldiers to fight in the wars. King Edward I began the redefining of the legal term fee simple. The following is from The History of the Common Law of England by Matthew Hale, 1713. Quote, tenthly, he made that great alteration in estates from what they were formerly, by statute Westminster 2, capital 1, whereby estates of fee simple, conditional at common law, were turned into estates tail, not removable from the issue by the ordinary methods of alienation. And upon this statute, and for the qualifications hereof, are the superstructures built of 4H7, capital 32, 32H8, and 33H8, unquote. Those living on your land under fee tail, or a lesser title, via deed to the land, would pay the king's tax. As a metaphor, as applied today, you can be charged a tax when you are told you have fee simple title if you are a common man. The corporation's holdings are not taxed depending on the corporate charter granted by the government, or if you have a trust that contains fee simple title with tax protection, you could be protected legally, but you still don't own the land. When the life of the trust expires or is mishandled by the trustees, it reverts back to the corporation's sole through alienation and office found, or by confiscation due to delinquent tax obligations. So any fee simple title you may have comes by legal right, not sovereign grant. This is the difference between the tenants on the land and the corporation. Again, if you are talking about the corporation or any of its holdings, its fee simple title is not taxed and is by sovereign grant from the king, enhanced by conquest as his successor and trustee over his holdings. George Washington's thought on independence from the king was echoed by many of our forefathers. Oh, this is a very telling quote here. In May 1775, George Washington said, quote, "If you ever hear of me joining in any such measure, such as separation from Great Britain, you have my leave to set me down for everything wicked," unquote. He also said, quote, "It is not the wish or interest of the government of Massachusetts or of any other upon this continent, separately or collectively, to set up for independence," unquote. Wow. That from Ingersoll, North American Review, August 1892. Now, to the Act of Washington, and for those of you who have not seen this, the act that made the reclaiming and managing of the King's Corporation possible, and made possible the end run around the 1787 Constitution. State versus district. Did the 1787 Constitution survive? Fall, 1997. Quote, "How is this accomplished? In reading the Messages and Papers of the Presidents, Volume 1, 1789 to 1897, I discover the following. Gentlemen of the Senate, pursuant to the powers vested in me by the act entitled An Act Repealing After the Last Day of June, next, the duties heretofore laid upon distilled spirits imported from abroad, and laying others in their stead, and also upon spirits distilled within the United States, and for appropriating the same. I have thought fit to divide the United States into the following districts, namely, the District of New Hampshire to consist of the State of New Hampshire, the District of Massachusetts to consist of the State of Massachusetts." This is George Washington selling out the young country right away in 1791. "The District of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations to consist of the State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. The District of Connecticut to consist of the State of Connecticut. You see what he's doing? He's superseding the state governments with the federal government. Right away, folks, right away he did this. The District of Connecticut to consist of the state of Connecticut. The District of Vermont to consist of the state of Vermont. The District of New York to consist of the state of New York. The District of New Jersey to consist of the state of New Jersey. The District of Pennsylvania to consist of the state of Pennsylvania. The District of Delaware to consist of the state of Delaware. The District of Maryland to consist of the state of Maryland. The District of Virginia to consist of the state of Virginia. The District of North Carolina to consist of the state of North Carolina. The District of South Carolina. And the District of Georgia to consist of the state of Georgia. I guess South Carolina. I think he skipped a few words there. Back to, okay, then that was from March 4th, 1791. George Washington sticking a stake into the heart of this, of the young country. Back to Montgomery's words. In George Washington's proclamation of March 30th, 1791, he declares the District of Columbia to be created and its borders established. He says further, quote, "And Congress, by an amendatory act passed on the third day of the present month of March, has given further authority to the President of the United States," unquote. You know, it's kind of funny. Washington is lauded in mainstream history as having rejected the kingship. They wanted to make him king, and we're told that Napoleon was just in awe of Washington's humility, because obviously Napoleon didn't have any humility. But folks, there was no difference, or very little difference. Washington, in effect, made himself king. He made whoever's president king. For practical purposes, in 1791. These are again the words of Washington. Quote, "First of all, the judicial districts were created by the Judiciary Acts of 1789. No, this is somebody else writing. Who is this? I don't know. Anyway. 2 years before Washington said Congress gave him additional powers. Thereby Washington created the district states." Okay, this is Montgomery writing. Washington created the district states so the federal government could use the militias to crush the tax protesters in Pennsylvania by Washington's order. Since the judicial districts already existed, why did they recreate them? If the district states were already created, would it not be redundant to create them again? Washington said he was dividing the United States into district states. He said, dividing the states, folks. Listen, dividing the states. Not creating districts in the states. Dividing the states into districts. Changing them. Or would you not divide them? Because the states were already divided. How can you divide, separate the states made by the state and federal charters or constitutions? Why do this when Congress already had the power to put down rebellion in Article 1, Section 8, U.S. Constitution? This was an excuse by Washington to divide the states into districts, extending the jurisdiction of the District of Columbia, or Congress, and delegating to the President authority given to Congress to suppress insurrection under Article 1, Section 8. And that last part kind of lost me. Second, the use of any military power before Congress declares war by direction of the President is done by him as Commander-in-Chief. Until Congress declares war, they cannot stop the President unless they impeach him, or when they declare worthy can stop the president. Oh, man. Needs an editor. Or when they declare war, they can stop the president with their power of the purse. Unless the president were to then declare a national emergency as commander-in-chief, overriding Congress, in effect declaring himself king, or, in our case, holding anyone holding that office, which we now have. I disagree with the unconstitutional emergency powers claimed by the president, but unless the judiciary declares the president out of line, neither you nor I can change this unless you or I were to be elected president and declared this power unconstitutional. But Congress would then impeach you or me to protect public policy. Around and around it goes. Again, this power comes from their operating under executive jurisdiction, insular capacity, which was allowed by the judiciary, beginning with what Washington did in 1791. Because it was up to the judiciary to declare what Congress and Washington were doing as unconstitutional, and up to Washington to not take power delegated to Congress. This power was affirmed by the Congressional Act of 1845, and in the 1850s by the insular cases. This set the stage for Lincoln to legislate by executive orders, and here we are. Third, the districts Washington created answered directly to the commander-in-chief, not Congress. In order for these districts to be created by the president, Congress had to give the president power outside of the Constitution as declared by Washington himself. Martial law can be used as soon as the military is called upon to put down insurrection or fight a war. Washington created district states, not state districts, and the military occupied the Pennsylvania district until the insurgents went home. Washington said these districts were created for putting down the rebellion. However, they were never disbanded when the rebellion ended. The following quote is from the Harvard Law Review, Our New Possessions, page 481. Quote, "These courts, then, are not constitutional courts in which the judicial power conferred by the Constitution on the general government can be deposited. They are incapable of receiving it. They are legislative courts, created in virtue of the general right of sovereignty which exists in the government, or in virtue of that clause which enables Congress to make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory belonging to the United States." Lowercase u. "The jurisdiction with which they are invested is not a part of that judicial power which is conferred in the third article of the Constitution, but is conferred by Congress in the execution of those general powers which that body possesses over the territories of the United States." Capital U. Unquote. See also Propeller Genesee Chief versus Fitzhugh, Jackson versus Magnolia, Downs versus Bidwell, Allison and Company versus Evatt. Below you will see how Lincoln codified the war powers. The nexus was the district states Washington had created. I won't go into the subject of the conquest after the Civil War, since it is far easier to understand. I invite you to read and study the documents in Part 3 to learn about this subject. However, I offer below the codification of military occupation, conquest, and international codification of martial law. You can download the whole General Order 100. Let's see. The martial law, military jurisdiction, military necessity, retaliation. Quote, Article 1. The place, district, or country occupied by an enemy stands, in consequence of the occupation, under the martial law of the invading or occupying army. Whether any proclamation declaring martial law or any public warning to the inhabitants has been issued or not. Martial law is the immediate and direct effect and consequence of occupation or conquest. Folks, this is why all the so-called patriots out there who are decrying or warning about martial law is going to be declared, it's pointless. It's already declared. We're already in it. The only thing we don't have are the troops on the streets. But legally, it's already here, folks. You need to know that. And it goes back to 1791. And it was, the wrenches were tightened, the screws were tightened extremely, though, during the Reconstruction Acts, after the so-called Civil War. The presence of a hostile army proclaims it martial law. Article 2. Martial law does not cease during the hostile occupation, except by special proclamation ordered by the commander-in-chief, or by special mention in the treaty of peace concluding the war, when the occupation of a place or territory continues beyond the conclusion of peace as one of the conditions of the same. Act 3. Martial law in a hostile country consists in the suspension by the occupying military authority of the criminal and civil law, and of the domestic administration and government in the occupied place or territory, and in the substitution of military rule and force for the same, as well as in the dictation of general laws, as far as military necessity requires this suspension, substitution, or dictation. The commander of the forces may proclaim that the administration of all civil and penal law shall continue, either wholly or in part, as in times of peace, unless otherwise ordered by the military authority. Unquote. Those were instructions for the government of armies of the United States in the field, issued as General Orders Number 100, Adjutant General's Office. Okay, I'll tell you what, this last part here, American Land Ownership, A True Oxymoron by James Montgomery, this is a long chapter. It's going to take two parts, and this will be the first part. I'll split it up. And that'll do it for now. This has been part 7, the last chapter of The United States is Still a British Colony. This chapter was entitled American Land Ownership, A True Oxymoron by James Montgomery. I'm Gordon Comstock. This has been the Ministry of Truth.